Organic! The way that nature intended it. Don't panic!
Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, better known as the Invisible Gardener. That song was done by my friend Jeff Garavoy. He does a group called Masonic Jesus. I got him in '84 to do that for me. It's a really cool song. We also did an instrumental version of it. anyway, today we have we're going to be as I said last show, we're going to be doing a lot of stuff about rock dust. We're having a rock dust, I call it rock dust party. So all throughout the rest of this year, a couple of times this month and next month, we'll be doing rock dust. And then next year, we're going to have at least four shows on just on rock dust. And what I want to do is I want to have as many different rock dust people there and have a rock dust party and talk about remineralization. But today we have it appears that we have a rock dust star amongst us, because this person has been involved in rock dust almost as long as I have been. In the early 1980s, he started Rock Dust Local in Vermont. I like Vermont. I was in Putney, Vermont. Thomas, you were anywhere near Putney?
Yeah, we're up north, a little north of Putney, but Vermont's a small state, so.
Yeah, I love Vermont. I was there, let's see, 74, something like that in Vermont. But anyway, Rock Dust Local. Is that because you get it locally there, or is it just that the name you decided to do?
We call it Rock Dust Local because our specialty is regional sourcing rock dust minerals. So we spent a long time and continue to prospect for rock dust all over the country and in other places too. And so our objective is to be able to deliver regional rock dust materials into local growers, and doing that to keep our freight costs down and keep the cost down and all the rest of that stuff. But we just hit on that Rock Dust Local name and seem to have stuck.
Well, you know, basically what I do is as a class, and this is a class that I've been talking about for pretty much since I started doing my radio shows. I tell people we want to add rock dust, compost, and mulch. And the number one thing people call me about, they email me, what the heck is rock dust? What do you talk about? What is rock dust? And so why don't you tell people your definition of rock dust, and then tell everybody how you got into it, how you ran across it, you know, what happened?
Okay, well, I guess I'll start with how I came across it, and that helps to explain what I think about rock dust and what it is. Back in the 80s, there was a fellow named John Homaker who wrote a book called The Survival of Civilization, which there are three major problems that he figured were facing civilization, and one of them was the climate problems that he saw coming. And one of the things that he talked about was to interact with the carbon cycle and geotectonic cycle, and to mimic glaciation in such a way that human beings could actually, you know, positively influence the environment and the climate and so forth and so on. So he settled on glacial deposits because he figured, well, the glaciers ground up rocks till dust, and they, as they moved across the land, they ground a diversity of rock to a powder. And so
you
picking
there?
Up these glacial materials and spreading them back on the land would tend to mimic that portion of the climate cycle. And we started looking at glacial materials and found a bunch around, and found that they were widely diverse. I actually found the glacial sand and gravel pit that he worked out of up in the Great Lakes region, and we looked at some of that material. But
did you meet him?
I never did. No, I didn't meet him. I I've been working with Joanna Compe, who was a good friend of John Homaker's and Don Weaver, who helped publish the
book. Friends with all three of them. Did you tell them that you're going to be on the Invisible Gardener show? Because, you know, they're going to be on. Don's going to be on soon, so is Joanne. I'm trying to decide whether to get everybody on at the same time or give each person, because each in their own right, you know. You have so much going on, we can't go over in 40 minutes, let alone have two or three of you guys in there at the same time. I know John Haymaker and Don Weaver. I've known a lot of people, because I said I've been involved in broadcasting and this stuff a long time ago. Do you ever use a Nitron A35?
No, I haven't even heard of that.
Okay, so it's a Nitron Industries. It's in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I went there in 1970 and gave a talk. They used to give these organic workshops, and they would invite people from all over the world, you know, talk about organics. There was Tuning Into Nature. He wrote a book called Tuning Into Nature. I'm trying to think of his name now. But he wrote a whole bunch of books. But what happened was, a whole bunch of people showed up there with a variety of different sources of rock dust and sources of minerals. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they have their own rock dust called glacial rock dust, which is exactly, they got it because they were friends with Haymaker, and that's their main source there. But listen, tell people because I could, we have so much stuff here to talk about. You know, next week I'm doing a BRICS and going over BRICS and refractometers.
Yeah.
And you have on your website, you have one of the rock tests, which is a BRICS mix.
Yeah, BRICS blend, and that would be a basalt. So the story, our story, is that we moved out away from, or to include other types of rock dust, hard rock materials such as volcanic basalt. There's a number of different materials. A lot what they would have in common would be their silicates or alkaline silicates.
Right.
We do also work in some granitic material, which tend to be less on the alkaline side. But the point being is, for remineralization, you're going to look for a broad spectrum of nutritive minerals.
That's what you call best, right?
Well, the best. I call it the broad elemental spectrum tectonic, with the tectonic meaning the ability to influence the geotectonic cycles of the Earth. So these materials do interact with everything from the climate all the way down to the molten mass of the center of the Earth, and they are different than the soluble fertilizers that conventional agriculture is using in a number of ways.
And certainly, very different.
They tend to actually promote the building of carbon and the creation of healthy soil and soil tilth. They actually help the microbes proliferate, and the plants can uptake these minerals. And so it's a different way of looking at it from conventional ag, but it's certainly valuable, especially now when people are starting to realize that the earth, the soil, and the skin of soil on the topsoil on the, that's covering the earth is potentially the largest carbon sink and controlling greenhouse gas emissions on the planet.
That's
and
right. Hey, Deborah, excuse me for a minute. Deborah, are you there?
I am. I'm listening. It's fascinating.
I can hear you breathe. Does any of this sound familiar?
Yes, it does, but yeah.
So, you know, so Thomas, you know, I have to send you a copy of my new book. It's called Don't Panic, It's Organic. And a lot of it has to do with the earth. A lot of it has to do with the soil. A lot of it has to do, I tell people exactly what you were saying in terms of the skin. The soil, think of the soil as the skin of the earth. And every time we're dumping chemicals in, we're just destroying. See, I do, for example, arbor I'm an arborist, but the way I work is I look, let's acknowledge the soil first. Let's work on that, and you'll find that everything comes from healthy soil. If you damage your soil and there's nothing there, and that's, you know, Bhaktas is a key to this whole, you know, because mineral deficiency, right? Mineral deficiency is the key to everything. And the way that you get mineral deficiency is the soil is not working. Where do you think you get the minerals from in the first place? But listen, one of the things I wanted to know that I was really, well, there are a bunch of things on your website that was really, really, really cool that I love. And I talked about, for example, paramagnetic rock. I was talking about paramagnetic at that conference. It's one of the things I was talking about. Oh, Phil Callahan, that was his name, because he was talking about tuning into nature. And he heard my talk about using paramagnetic rock. I still do. I call them tree vents, because one of the things I do is I want to reground the tree again. In order to get it regrounded, I want to use paramagnetic material that automatically will help the tree to reground itself. And in the process, it also expands the microbial life in there. But the thing I was talking about was the minerals. It's called remineralization. And I tell folks all the time about remineralization. That's why I want to have Don Weber on, his great book on remineralization. That's Joanne Campy and the remineralization.org folks have been around forever. Talk about remineralization, how that works. But I know you're going through it too when you talk to like professionals and you're trying to get them to say, look, you can get billions of dollars on this pesticide. You're not going to solve their problem if you ignore the soil.
Right. Well, that's the key, is a lot of people are trying to figure out how to solve problems if they are having a lot of the conventional growers that they start moving towards biologic methods when they are pretty much at the end of their rope.
Yeah.
They can only put so much, synthetic fertilizers in there. They notice that their application rates have to go up and up, and they've essentially been mining their soils out of carbon and killing off the microbes through fungicides and herbicides. So it's a different way of looking at it. Some people are surprisingly very open to it. I don't think there's a gap of will necessarily. It's more of a knowledge gap, and they care right. for their lands.
They're good people. They're good farmers. They try to do the best they can. It is not their fault that they've been basically brainwashed and pushed into this chemical regimen of using this high nitrogen fertilizer, this pesticide to produce more and more. They could have easily just have been told, look, take care of the soil, take care of the earth, do better for the earth in terms of, you know, what to do with the compost, how to make compost, because we have a show about compost a lot, and that's a big issue there, too, because people don't know how to make compost. There's nothing in the compost. But that's a whole different entirely ball game. I take it you use, you read Acres USA?
Right. I read Acres, and we actually advertise, Rock Dust Local advertises in Acres, and we'll be going to the conference. I think the conference down in Louisville this year in the beginning of December is going to be a great conference, a lot of great speakers.
Cool, great.
Some of the real famous people that are sort of promoting regenerative-type agriculture are going to be there. I find that they know a lot more about farming than I do, and I'll admit that. I know I've come at this from the mining and aggregate side, and I've been learning from these growers. And that's one thing that I will say is that we've always tried to integrate the rock dust minerals into management practices. So in other words, it's not just that you put rock dust on, walk away, and everything's great. This is just a tool. We see it as a foundational practice for, especially for soils that are degraded, and they're looking for to reestablish a foundation. And then once you've got that in place, then all of these great practices that they're working on, whether it's cover cropping, using these diverse cover crops for sources of nitrogen and to aerate the soil and keep a green cover on it, getting away from heavy tillage, using compost, and you know, judiciously applying nutrients as needed. If you see glaring deficiencies, balancing the soils, using microbial teas and applications of humic acids, fulvic acids, things like this, where you're really going to optimize the growth of the plant and watch that the disease resistance go down, the pest goes down. Not that you can't use controls when you need them, but it seems to, when you're doing things right, and it seems like the pressures go down in terms of optimizing the growing conditions. And just remember, that we're going to end up with a situation because of the climate and the instability of the climate, where our growing conditions on the outdoors and in the wild may be unstable. And so it's really important that we learn how to manage our soils and create the conditions where when we get heavy rains, those soils are going to be able to absorb the rain, so that in a time of drought, that there be a residual amount of water in the water tables, and then work with indoor growing environments, greenhouses and high tunnels. And it's really a new world that we're going to be involved with here for the foreseeable future.
Thomas, did you see the movie Symphony of the Soil?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you would love it, man. It'd be like you're right up there talking, because they're saying exactly the same thing about the soil and how we have to take care of it. They don't mention rock dust as much, which is what I would love to, you know, them to start to key in more in terms of the remineralization process. But here's something else that's really interesting, because I know in terms of just dealing with farmers and trying to get the farmers to understand, I mean, around the world, because we do so much damage to the earth now in the name of farming, and not so much farming in a sense, yeah, farming, but we also cut down forests for cattle, a bunch of other things, you know, which is not exactly good. But the other area that's really interesting, that here's the area that I work with, it's a homeowner. So there's a lot of people own property. And to me, it's like small farms. They got soil, and the same principles applies to them, and how they do remineralization, how they take care of their soil as an arborist. I work with diseases and stuff all the time. There's a new disease, not a new disease, but there's another one that's in the news now. I can't even pronounce it. It's such a weird new disease. It has a weird name. It's like Botrytophoria. Something like that. It doesn't even sound like Phytophthora, but it's something similar like that. It's a fungi that's attacking the various different types of trees, ficus trees, just killing them instantly. There's lots of different, like Phytophthora, different types of disease attacks trees. But here's the thing, you know, it's like, nothing to cure. Well, dude, why don't we pay attention to the soil? Because if we take care of the soil and we bring... What I do to control these diseases is I started re-inoculating the soil. I started I bring the soil back to life. I actually start growing mushrooms. I buy mushroom spores, and I learn if the mushroom spores can grow in the soil is living, starting to function. And so when I even talk about psychedelic, we're talking about normal mushrooms that grow in the forest that tell us that the mycelium is alive. So I learn how to encourage the use of the compost is very important. If the compost is dead, no amount of compost is going to bring it back to life. So I'm always helping people how to make live compost, how to learn how to use different sources of rock dust. I loved your website for several different reasons. One is that, first of all, I'm surprised I didn't run across it sooner, but the other thing that blew me away, right, is like, what, free shipping? Come on, you're kidding me, right? Free shipping? Look, I'm used to buying green sand from off the coast of New Jersey, buying green sand. I buy rock dust from about 10 different sources, right? And they're all shipped in different places. So $20 for 50 pounds, another $30 or $40 to ship it, okay? I'm used to that. So I'm looking at your website going, St. George's Black. Now, that sounds really, really nice source of – I mean, obviously you guys know what you're doing, because – you know, I love the George's Black. Explain to people what George's Black is.
Well, the St. George Black is a regional.
St. George, yeah.
Yeah, actually St. George Black is named after the quarryman, George Wilcox, and he's, in my opinion, he's a saint because he started with nothing and he just built this thing from scratch, and he does a good job, works really hard, but the mineral, the black mineral, it's basically a type of shale. It's a carbonaceous or metamorphic clay type material that was laid down. It was laid down at a period of time when there wasn't much oxygen anywhere, and particularly in these lagoon type settings where there was some water, there was plenty of algae type blooming up above, and it just robbed everything of oxygen. So anything that settled down to the bottom in these sediments basically stayed there with the carbon in it and the sulfur in it and some calcium silicates and all of the rest.
Nice. Very nice.
By the time we get done, years and years and eons later, it's this black, fine material that has all these basic type nutritive materials that are needed to life. And once it's exposed to the atmosphere, it's highly reactive. We see it flowering up on the surface, so you get a white precipitate form on the surface, which is, when we did the analysis of it, we found it had all sorts of calcium and silica and potassium and
all the exotics
carbon
too.
So this material we found actually to be able to manage phosphorus, which is a pollutant. And we're doing some tests with the state of Vermont right now. They called it the Phosphorus Innovation Challenge, where we've learned that we can apply these materials with or without biochar or biocarbon, and actually latch on to solution reactive phosphorus. In other words, the phosphorus that tends to run off into the ditches, especially when these large dairy farms are putting out liquid manures, and they've got a heavy application of manure, and then it rains. Now you've got a problem downstream, so we're proposing some of this material to catch some of the phosphorus, the overabundance of phosphorus at the surface, and mineralize it into a plant available form, but not in a solution form that's going to run off into the ditches.
Yeah, and the basalt is also a unique source of rock dust. It's paramagnetic to start with, and it probably has a bunch of incredible also minerals too, and it's actually very fine. And the mixture looks like a wonderful mix together. You know, I'm what you call a rock dust freak. I've been looking all over the world. I use about, I don't know, 10 different types of rock dust, and then I thought, well, that's it. I am never going to find any more source, then I'm looking at this stuff. Wait a minute. Where does this St. George came from? What is going on here? You know, because I have never really heard of St. George's black. But
we just gave it that name, and we like to. Sometimes we'll have to just name these materials.
Oh, cool. Why I never heard of it. I'm going, hey, I'll take it, because it's, you know, there are lots of good sources all everywhere once you learn how to tune in. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to be ordering. This is a Green Mountain Granite. Tell me about that one.
All right. Well, the Green Mountain Granite's another regional rock from around here. And by the way, you can go on our website. You can go to the regional rock pages, and we're going to update that pretty soon. But there's probably about 50 different regional sources from around the country, and we do it by region.
I don't see it on your site up here. I see biochar and humates, liquids, rock dust and clay, organic fertilizers, seed products. Where's the seed regional?
If you go to the home page of Rock Dust Local, so it'd be rockdustlocal.com, that'd be the home page.
Okay.
Then that is really the home page of the website. I think what you're on is probably the store, which is a website store.
No, it's on the home page. I'm still looking for the regional, where it says, you know, you have regional, because that's a good idea to show what you can get.
Yeah, it should be in the navigation bar. At any rate, when you find that, it should be right up in the net, on the top At the top of the page, you'll see Regional Rock. It starts at home, and then it goes store, Carbon Smart catalogs, and the fourth one over there would be, fifth one over there would be Regional Rock, right next to Biochar. At any rate, there's a bunch of geochemistry you can read down. Of course, these are geochemical analysis that'll give you basically the elemental analysis. Won't tell you a whole lot about the mineral content, but
what's the house mix? It sounds like coffee. You know, what's the house mix? Is it organic?
Yeah.
What's the
house mix? Is actually our own. That's our own bit. We do the basalt with a little bit of the St. George black in it. Now I want to mention basalt because the basalts are really. We consider the basalts probably the gold standard for remineralization or yeah. As they're starting to call it, enhanced weathering. And the enhanced weathering part has come up from, I guess, some academics have been studying carefully how the basalts and other alkaline silicates behave in the soil. And they realize that the calcium and magnesium, in other words, the alkaline elements, will convert to bicarbonate. So, in other words, these alkaline elements will fix carbon in the soils in the form of carbonates or bicarbonates. And then as they go downstream and eventually end up in the watersheds and out into the ocean, these alkaline elements will help to buffer the oceans downstream. So now this is where we're starting to talk about interacting with the geotectonic cycle, because right now the alkalinity of the ocean is dropping precipitously. So we're going down towards vinegar. And up in the Pacific Northwest, as an example, some of the oyster farms are having trouble raising oysters in the wild. Their seed yeah. oysters, their shells are melting.
Yeah.
They're essentially dissolving in this acidic ocean environment. It's a direct wow. result of global warming and the temperature yeah. rising in the oceans. In order to stabilize the climate, we're really going to have to do things that ultimately sweeten the ocean. And these alkaline silicates, particularly the basalt, which you can apply at very, very high application rates and essentially do no damage. In other words, you do good all the way up to extremely high rates in most environments.
Here's something I thought about. You know Alka-Seltzer, right? Plop, plop, piss, fizz?
Uh-huh.
Right, why don't we make a big Alka-Seltzer-like rock dust tablet, right, that you can just plop in the ocean? And let it, because there's, you know, the many other rock dusts that I know of are very, very high alkaline. I think acetamide's 8 pH, right? You know, so wouldn't that work putting it in the
yeah,
ocean directly that way?
Well, it's not. See, this is where you start getting in the mineralogy of the whole thing. For instance, most people associate raising your pH with lime. In other words, it. Generally, yeah. when you say to some, you know, growers yeah. or whatever, you want to raise your pH or they want to raise their pH, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to go for
lime.
High-cal lime or, you know, high-calcium lime or dolomitic yeah. lime, which is a magnesium limestone. And they're not going to think about the silicates, in other words, the alkaline silicates, such as a basalt or calcium silicates, maybe from wollastonite, which is really, really high calcium and silica. They're going to think about the carbonates, but the problem there in terms of remineralization and trying to interact with the climate is that the carbonates themselves, especially in acidic soil, will actually off-gas CO2. So if you started to look at the soil respiration, and this is what the academics are doing, these are the scientists are doing this, they're going to find that if they put out, and they're documenting this, if you put out high-cal lime or magnesium carbonate, calcium carbonate, in an acidic environment, that as that carbonate weathers, it's going to release CO2. Whereas if you put out a silicate, a calcium silicate, or a basalt, which is essentially a calcium aluminum silicate, that's not going to happen because there isn't their conversion. The conversion doesn't take place so that the CO2 goes off. You're actually reversing it. You're grabbing what would be CO2 from the soil environment, and you're also managing nitrogen. So instead of nitrous oxide, which is N2O, nitrous oxide, which is one of the largest greenhouse gases that come off of conventional ag, especially when they're applying nitrogen to it, the application of these aluminum silicates or calcium silicates, such as the basalt, reduces CO2, in other words, captures carbon, and reduces nitrous oxide, in other words, manages nitrogen. And the net effect is you're reducing greenhouse gas emissions from the soils. And then downstream, you're buffering the oceans as the alkaline elements filter down into the watershed and make it down into the ocean. You're going to get these precipitates like aragonite and other type of calcium precipitates that are needed by reef plankton, all the other crustaceans that are out there. These fall to the bottom of the ocean and become essentially limestone. And now you're interacting with the geotectonic cycle, and you can do it in a positive way. And at the same time, you're benefiting the microbes, and you mentioned the fungus and the mycelia. The orders of magnitude of the calcium interacting with all of these and the fungus growing and proliferating, those fungus and others are producing carbon compounds. They call them it's a sticky black substance that is essentially a form of fixed carbon. And once you start doing that, you're starting to build topsoil rather than diminish.
Oh my God, build topsoil! Oh my God, so that's like, oh no, you don't want to build topsoil. Okay, sorry. I know we have been depleting it and then damaging it and destroying it and doing everything we can as if it wasn't even there. And then we say we need to grow more, and then we publish stuff that says, well, there's no difference between organic and conventional methods. And it's like, give me a break. By the way, you guys do biochar formulations. Let me guess, you are actually blending biochar with basalt, aren't you? Just tell me. Go ahead.
Yeah, we are. That's a rich mix formulation. We're the first ones, one of the first to actually do it commercially, and it was an obvious thing to do. Obvious to people who are working with these materials. So we blend biochar with a basalt. We also blend biochar with the St. George Black when we're trying to manage phosphorus in particular.
But, is that up here on your website, the combo deal? What's the name of the mix that you have? Because that's what the St. George's Black is, right? Is that? But that's not the biochar and the basalt.
That'd be the FosCap. Yeah, if you get to the home page, if you looked at rockdustlocal.com, I think you're probably on store.rockdustlocal, but if you go to rockdustlocal.com.
Oh, okay, you're right. I'm on store.rockdustlocal. That'll do it.
Yeah,
somehow I got onto store instead
of
Rockdust.
Yeah, the store is like, that's packaged goods. People were calling us, and we didn't do any of that, and We're dealing mostly directly, and we still do most directly with the growers. But people got news that we were, you know, had the material, and they were calling us for bags. And so we ended up putting up a little website store. But if you go to the rockdustlocal.com, that's the home page, and you can scroll down and get all the science and all the
okay,
stuff on
okay, which is
the
one that has the basalt and the biochar mixing.
Right.
What's
so if
the name
you go
of
to
it?
Carbon Smart, the Carbon Smart pages, you'll see a bunch of the rich mix. Rich stands for remineralized inoculated char.
Nice.
And then the FosCap, phosphorus cap. That's a similar kind of bit with the St. George Black and the biochar and some of the formulations there. The FosCap is.
So you know your stuff is actually perfect for a lot of these homeowners. You know that, right? You know that, right?
Well, these people have
no idea what they're doing. They go buy junk all the time. Then they have the pests and diseases and all kinds of stuff. I mean, yep. If I was a bad guy, I would say, yeah, you have to pay me $5,000 a month for the rest of your life to deal with white flies and pests because, you know, I can spray and never solve the problem. But
yeah,
I've been buying local source here of biochar because, you know, I've been always always looking for ways, because I know about carbon, and I know what happens when we do it wrong, and we release the, and I know that the mycelium needs the carbon in order to be able to take the trace minerals and work it through carbonic acid. I understand the whole process, but
yep.
Carbon is not an easy thing to be getting into the soil since we've been damaging it. We don't even understand how it works, let alone with killing it. I found a local source, but you know, it doesn't make it's a wonderful mix. You get two things that are synergetic together and then use that, because I'm going to personally buy it, because, you know, you don't run into the stuff. You can't go to the store and say, could you give me some of this NOS Foscap, or maybe I can ask them, hey, can you carry Rich Mix, you know what I mean? Because that's the way you do it. You tell the store, well, I want to buy this, you can sell it to me if you like, right?
Well, we're supplying rock dust in California. You're out in California, so we have some regional sources of rock dust that we're selling and supplying. For instance, there's a great biochar maker out there in California, Pacific Biochar. That's Josiah Hunt. He makes a great cultured biochar. In other words, he's mixing biochar in with his compost blends, and he decided he wanted to remineralize.
Where in California do you think?
Yeah, he's up in Willows, I believe, is where he's at. He's
a little bit north
of Frisco.
Yeah.
Well, nowhere near me.
In Southern California.
Yeah, so... I don't know what to say down there. We don't. Funny, Southern California. I'm sure there's folks down there. At one point, we were working with a company called Genesis that was making some biochar. They were in the Los Angeles area. I think they were involved with other like movies, the whole movie star thing. But
everything is being shipped here. Nobody's really making it down here.
Yeah.
Yet. I mean, I even have to get the wood vinegar, shipped in, because nobody's making it around here.
Nope. You know, it's going to come. It's just a question of time. California is very forward-thinking in terms of, trying to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. They haven't figured out yet that, you know, you can put inputs in the ground that will augment the agricultural capture the way we've been talking about. And of course, biochar is a big one. If you, for every pound of biochar you're putting in the ground, say if the char was 75% or 80% carbon, essentially you're putting that much carbon in the ground. We figure for every ton of biochar we bury in the ground in the form of an input, we're offsetting about 3.5 tons of CO2, and that's for all intents and purposes captured. Even if it'll stay there for a couple hundred years or more, if not longer, and then it starts this engine of building microbial populations, forming humus, which is a stable form of carbon. Which is the foundation of a lot of healthy soils, is humus. And so biochar, I think, is going to figure prominently in regenerative agriculture. Of course, if you don't have it, you can't use it. If you can't get it, you can't use it. And it's
going to figure very prominently in the arborist world in terms of, okay, how do we manage our forests? What do we need to do locally? What do cities need to do with their trees? What do we need to do? Oh, we don't need to give them the more chemical fertilizer. Maybe we should, you know, and the same thing with homeowners. I deal with people with massive properties who are going, look, my home is only worth $14 million because of these five giant oak trees, right?
Yeah.
You know, and this one person contacted me because their oak tree has phytophthora. And you won't believe what I did. It doesn't cure the phytophthora because it's a disease you can't cure, but you can make it go away, literally, go into submission. The tree will be survived fine. It's just to pay attention to one single thing. Guess what that is?
What is that?
I got some biochar, the pure stuff. Now, over here in Southern California, there's a guy that makes, he blends biochar with earthworm casting. He calls it superchar.
Yep.
BioSolutions, I think, is the name of the folks. I forget his name now. But I've been buying him. So I buy this product, which is already, you know, with the earthworm castings and the biochar together. And it's also highly microbial active. But what I also do is I have my own product, which I invented. It's called Super Seed, which you might like it. It's a microbiological activator. So I add that to the mix. And then that's all what I did was two things. One is I injected it into the soil. Basically, what I do is I try to get a little colonization going into the soil. So I set up I call them a tree vent. So I have this paramagnetic clay drain pipe, which I put in the ground. Into it, I make this mixture, and then I make sure that it has a filtration system, so it gives a pure compost tea. And in that mix, we want the microbe and everything to survive. But what happens is that it makes instantly that mixture there literally makes the Phytophthora say bye-bye, I'm not interested anymore in this tree over here. And then on top of that, you know how the trees, they like the oak tree, they would bleed, right? It tells you that the tree has a disease, right?
Mm.
So it turns out the ants do not like this stuff either because it's highly biological. So I take a handful, I put it on like a poultice. The highly mineralized, highly microbialized, highly carbonized, because the carbon and the microbe together really makes these, because it makes for an excellent tea to spray. That's one of the things I spray. And it makes it, as you said, the minerals and other things in a highly soluble form that the trees can immediately absorb it. You'd be surprised how, because that's all it does, because that's what happens when you have these types of, like Phytophthora or any of these types of seeds. The soil is no longer functioning, doing what it's supposed to do. Here, have your daily minerals. If it ain't working, and the tree's not getting its daily minerals, and it's going, what the hell? And it gets more and more stressed out. And then the soil changes. You know, a lot of it has to do with the gardeners, you know, overwatering, chemicals in the soil, chemicals everywhere, killing the soil constantly. I mean, you know, you think you farmers have a hard time, right? You know, and they do. But if you're a good farmer, you could do it. But the same thing with homeowners, same thing with cities. People need to, and how do you deal with a forest? I mean, a forest, we're crying out loud, right? We should be able to do a forest the way the forest is supposed to be done, right? Without introducing any chemicals, without doing anything, and just encouraging the microflora to grow. And you'll find that if you're not healthy, the tree would die. If the healthy ones would continue to survive.
Mm-hmm. Well, a single application of a good solid single application of rock dust, such as a basalt or other broad spectrum, that will basically start the forest regenerative forest cycling. So you didn't even have to go back there repeatedly. You just get that material out one time. I think that biochar is potentially an excellent material, especially as you say. The trick with the biochar is you do want to invest it. You want to charge up the pores, because one tablespoon of biochar, a fine biochar or charcoal, is going to have just about a
gazillion
football field, if not more, worth of surface area in there. It's hard to imagine, but every single bit of that surface area is, could be populated by microbes. And
the good guys.
So that's and then of course, as you say, it tends to promote the beneficial microbes, whether they're fungus. You can introduce beneficial microbes, for instance, if people have problems with tomatoes. Tomatoes are a tough crop if you have poor soils or you've got the wrong kind of microbial populations. But for instance, a trichoderma, which you can introduce into the soil, and if you have biochar in there, it will tend to have a place to reside. That will go after some of these pathogens that tend to blight the tomatoes. And there's other types of microbes. There's just a whole host of beneficial microbes out there that are either in the wild or you can introduce them, the mycorrhizals, one that a lot of people know about.
I tell people the good guys and the bad guys don't live in the same place, and all you have to do is make a good place for all the good guys to live in. And it's not just one good guy, it's a whole bunch of, like they're living on different floors on a 20-story building, you know. They all inhabit different floors, they do different things, but together they're just as important, just like the earthworms are, you know, and that's important too. And the people don't seem to understand that. And, you know, I've been doing this for a long, long time. I mean, I knew Chuck Waters. He did my first book, How to Heal the Earth in Your Spare Time. That was 1970. And in those days, you would think, you know, that I don't see that much difference between now and then in a lot of ways, because people are still doing the very same thing. There are more people like you, you know, doing. I do notice that, but you know, other people die, so we're balancing each other out. They're about the same. So I think it's like 1 or 2%, a very small percentage of people that understand what it is to grow. The rest of them are just like they shouldn't be in the business growing. They shouldn't be farmers. They shouldn't be doctors for that matter. Whatever, you know. Do you know Arden Anderson?
Yeah. Yep, I've heard of Arden Anderson.
Yeah, well, he's a friend of mine. I met him at the Fayetteville, Arkansas, at that conference. He was one of the speakers. I was one of the speakers. Here's a doctor who went to being a farmer, then back to being a doctor, because that way he understands what the body needs. Uh-huh. Right?
Yep. Yeah. Well, we say that the healthcare. It starts in the ground. I mean, if this country, we don't want to get too into politics here, but you know, until we start building nutrient value back into our food system, we're going to continue to have these terrible degenerative illnesses. Yeah. And of course, you know, the chemicals that people are ingesting daily from conventional crop production are known to be cause all sorts of digestive problems. They can cause mental disorders and all sorts of
not just conventional, but the unconventional, the genetically engineered stuff. It's 100,000 times even worse. And then not to mention you just look outside. You don't even have to look anywhere. You get exposed to all types of electromagnetic radiation, all types of toxic things everywhere. So we're doing just all the right thing, not to mention climate change, right? And all this stuff that's going on. And so, but you, like me, we have to do what we have to do, right? And you believe in what you're doing. I love what you're doing. But it's an uphill battle. But you'll find that, for example, it's the same thing with a farmer and a homeowner. They both get to a point and go, well, if I don't change what I'm doing, I'm going to lose everything, right? It ain't going to happen. I got to figure out some other way of doing it, right?
Yeah.
So when they're up against a wall, that's when they're learned.
What? We do get a lot of calls from people who are just getting started in their gardens, and I remember someone, an old timer, told me that during the Great Depression, there were these victory gardens. Well, this was actually during the World War. It wasn't a Great Depression. It was during the World War II, I believe. They had some. They were saying that you've got to grow your food locally.
Right.
We've got to conserve.
Victory gardens, right?
So that's an inspiration because. You know, a lot of people have backyards, and they can turn their lawns into gardens. And in certain time of year, they can grow quite a bit of food in a little plot. And for instance, in Cuba, during the embargo, the years where we tried to starve them out, basically, I beg your pardon, but that's what we tried to do. after the collapse of the Soviet Union, we figured, I don't know who it was at the top, decided they were going to embargo pretty much any kind of fertilizer that was going into Cuba. And so they decided it would be by force. They had to essentially convert from a synthetic chemical base.
To organic, right?
Right to organic, because by force they didn't have
and that was good
fertilizers
for them.
anymore. And they started also realizing, because they couldn't transport They didn't have the fuel. They couldn't transport things long distances or even get themselves around. They began to dig up parking lots, which had been paved over. They dug the asphalt up, and they planted, they said in Havana, within the borders of Havana, within the district of the city, they grew, it was 50 to 75% of their food in Havana. So every square foot they could on the ground, and plus all the balconies had container pots and gardens. And then they broke up the big farm collectives, which had been basically controlled by large group. They broke those up into smaller plots so that individuals could manage smaller acreage. And they actually had to go back to animal power because they didn't have the diesel to run their tractors.
And they made compost.
They made worm castings for compost, and they did all of their biologic management for
my dad's disease. From Cuba, my mother's from Puerto Rico, so I used to go to Cuba a lot during the summertime on their farm, and I remember massive piles of compost, and they would use every part of the animal, everything. It was really cool.
Yeah, so that's just an example of what can be done. And I think the CSA kind of movement that we're seeing in this country, the community-supported agriculture where it's basically farm-to-plate, there isn't a middleman in there, a distributor. Basically, you're buying shares. So the grower has money when they need it, which is when they need to get their seed and their inputs and all of that business. They generally... They have money up front. They know how much they need to grow because the people are buying into the farm, and they have a vested interest in the success of that farm. So that's a great model. I think that's given a lot of life and new life to growers that are doing very well on small acreage. Hell, we ship to growers that are doing very well on 5 acres, 10 acres, and they're doing enough to that they can raise enough food to make some money, and they got a little bit of extra to,
It makes a big difference, too. I mean, it makes a big, big, big difference, even in a taste bud. If you was blind and walking through a forest, you would go, oh, what is going on with these fruit trees, right? Holy cow, right? Because you would taste them. But listen, I know that you guys, you're doing the right thing, and it looks like you're going in the right direction. I want you on my show again so we can talk more about rock dust and any of the other products you have. I myself am going to be putting an order for a bunch of different things, definitely the mixes and stuff. There's some nice liquids there, which I'm going to try. And then the biochar, I'll order some and see what happens. With the free shipping, it's a no-brainer because you get twice as much.
So we can ship anywhere in the country. So if you get to the store pages, the price you see is what it takes as long as you can get it. As long as you can get your mail, we can deliver to you. So we can
cool.
go all the way out.
I'm
going to
order some things, and then I'll be able to also start adding them to my the video that I'll be shooting on rock dust, because not only will I give the name, but I'll also give the name of the company that is available, because that's one of the things I want to do. Are you listed over on readmineralization.org?
Yeah, rock dust
cool.
locals. We're supporting Joanna. We're working together
cool.
to try to advance
right.
this thing. We really think that, with the new UN climate report that just came out, and I don't know, Bill McKibben can hardly string three words together right now. He wrote that book, The End of Nature, 35 years ago, and a warning of, sort of catastrophe, and now here it is. The UN report says you got 12 years to figure this out, and I think, it's going to be all of the above. It's going to be what we're doing.
All hands on deck.
It's going to be adaptation. There's no question we have to adapt, because if we started cold turkey tomorrow, which of course isn't going to happen, it's going to be 50 years potentially of instability. But, you know, all of these things that we're talking about are part of an adaptation process, whereas if we don't do any of this, you know, this could go on for to be really be the end of civilization as we know it, and we don't want that.
Well, not just civilization, but probably living beings will all, because we tend to take everybody down with us.
Yeah. But the kids are, you know, we owe it to the children to do what we can. And
Yes, we do. So I appreciate you coming on today. We'll get back to you.
Oh, well, thank you for being here and doing what you're doing, and we look forward to talking to you guys again.
And thank
Deborah was
samples.
So quiet. I haven't heard her at all.
She's been listening.
I've been listening. It's very, very, very good information.
Yeah. All right. Take care, Thomas. And the website is
rockdustlocal.com.
Rockdustlocal.com, right.
Yep.
That'll
get
guys.
You to the home page. And then if you want to go to the store, there's a bunch of different ways of getting there. But you start on rockdustlocal.com. Scroll all the way down in that homepage, and you'll get to some of the real current science and what some of the climatologists are doing. And we're involved in a lot of the groundbreaking science, and we're also at the same time really trying to advance it, because you know the scientists they'll study it for the next 10 years, and we're saying
now you got to do it.
Yeah, so we're out there, but.
I'll send you a copy of my book, Don't Panic, It's Organic. I know you'll love it. I didn't get you in it, but that doesn't mean you're not going to be in it, because that's one of the advantages of nowadays. You can easily update it, you know. So,
sure.
Do you have a book or anything? Did you write a book or anything? No? No book?
No. The only writing I contributed to one of the articles in the geotherapy book, which was published in 2015, end of 2015, which is a great compilation of all sorts of writing. I haven't written a book, just haven't had the time or inclination, but I try to keep, you know, current with folks and keep up with what's going on out there.
Well, I'm going to order some of your stuff right today or maybe Sunday at the latest. Definitely the different types of rock dust mix. I have to get it soon, because as soon as I get them, I can include them in my videos, because I want to show. I have about 5 different types of rock dust, 15 different types of rock dust I'm showing.
Wow.
And I haven't run across too many basalt rock dust formulations at all. So I was like, you know, because usually they're the typical like azomite, you know, those guys, right? So.
Yeah.
You know, so thank you for coming on. Okay.
We're formulating. We do quite a bit of formulating, and of course, we can do custom blends and all of that
cool.
for folk. But
all right. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks very much, and you guys have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you next time.
Okay.
Thank you,
I'm gonna do my the rest of the show. Okay, guys. So next week, which is the October 27th. I'm going to finally get to start talking about bricks, minerals, pests, and diseases. I'm going to mention rock dust a lot throughout it, because it's one of the best sources of trace minerals, especially if you get people who know what they're doing, like this basalt mix. You want to have some really, really nice sources of rock dust, where we talk about rock dust mix. And, of course, next week is the last week for the contest. So I've gotten a whole bunch of people that actually said, saying, look, I don't have any questions. I don't have anything to say. I love your show. Enter me in the contest. Bye. And like, boy, are you shy or what? let's see. And so that's the end of October. And then in November, starting November, we talk about compost. And then we're going to have Earthport folks on to do their lab testing. We're going to talk to them. And on November 17th, we have a show on super seaweed. And basically, not so much on super seaweed as people asking, what do you do? So I'm going to explain to you what it is that I'm doing with my spraying service. And then the 24th, we have this Diseases Day, Natural Disease Control. That we're also going to be doing that in December, diseases. I'm going to talk about one specific fungi that's a new one on the market now that's killing trees. It's got a weird name. I talked about it. It's called Biotrophia Vieira. Okay, everybody, so thank you very much. I think the show is ready at the 2 o'clock time, and I don't know what's going on. I guess we're done. Is that right, Mr. Engineer? 2 o'clock. It says 2 o'clock. Deborah, are you there?
Everyone.
You're really quiet today, Deborah.
Well, it was a lot of scientific information. It was very, very good. It's nothing that I could really consider.
Oh, there it is.
Thank you for listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. See you next Saturday.